So, without further ado, I would like to present Dr. Tim Green. He's a research scientist at a sister unit of mine, the Agricultural Systems Research Unit in Port Collins, Colorado, and he's going to be talking about energy balance in maize.
Thank you, Kendall. Let's check that out. Yes, I do thank the organizers of the session and for everyone for getting here and for things beyond our control, like a beautiful day and a room where you can look out and enjoy things if my talk gets boring. But also just wanted to acknowledge my co-authors, and in addition to Kendall, Sasindran is sitting in the back aisle there. So, you know, evapotranspiration obviously is a thing of importance to all of us, and just wanted to make that little point that it's really estimated and not measured directly for very important problems related to land-atmosphere interaction and, in this case, crop water use. In our case, we're estimating ET using a residual component of the energy balance, which we'll talk about, and applying it to limited irrigation or deficit irrigation experiments on plots. So small plots, not much fetch. And so we have lateral advection and vertical, according to yesterday's talk from Bushland and Kansas State, Dr. Lynn. That was a very nice talk. So we have potentially high advection issues, and I'll talk about that a little bit from adjacent treatment plots as well as the overall vicinity. And so what we're focusing on in our application is really looking at differences in ET between irrigation treatments, and also making the point that what we're measuring to estimate our heat balance component is very relevant to what the crop experiences in that plot, regardless of fetch issues. So energy balance equation, probably familiar to you. We take that and rearrange it and simplify it so that we remove the storage component, even on our 15-minute interval, which is probably not correct, but just want to acknowledge that. And we get the latent heat flux as a function, or as an additive function, of the net radiation, ground heat flux, which in this case I'll show you is oriented upward, and then the sensible heat flux is H. So this is just a simple diagram to show you those components and also emphasize a little bit that we're measuring at different planes, and some of them are not well-defined planes. Some are estimated from deeper, which I'll talk about, and the net radiation is obviously a difference of downward and upward, and we just get one number there. So first is soil heat flux. As I said, we actually don't measure it at the surface. We measure it 8 centimeters below the ground surface and then estimate the surface heat flux without really any latency assumed from the specific heat and the change in temperature. And the other important factor in that is that we measure the soil water content between those depths. I'll show you at 2, 4, 6 centimeters. And then the very important component of the energy balance, because we're estimating latent heat primarily from sensible heat, and you can see in the numerator these terms, which are fairly well estimated. We might argue there's some uncertainty about where that T0 is, but in our case we're using IRT for skin temperature, and then we have our air temperature at 0.8 meters above the crop canopy, and that moves over time, which is important in this experiment. The important thing I wanted to show you here is that our aerodynamic resistance is in the denominator, and so that's really an important control because that's fairly complicated to estimate. And just briefly, some of the factors that go into that are wind speed, and I'll show you what happens for relatively high wind speeds, and also the stability of the atmosphere plays into that with a correction factor. So this is one equation. Tried to limit it to not too many equations here. But if we look at aerodynamic resistance, you've got wind speed, you've got a function of the height factors of the logarithm and squared, and then you have this stability correction factor. We throw all that into RA and put that in the denominator. So you know, how well does this really work? And that's what we want to look at. And because we don't have fetch to look at absolute ET, we got together, Sasindran got some data from Dr. Gowda based on the Bushland lysimeter, which many of you are familiar with, very good fetch, very well designed experiment and control. And you can see some of the references of how long this has been in operation. So we're using this as just one basis of comparison. So in this case, we're looking at daily evapotranspiration from the lysimeter, which we would think of as ground truth, and then our method with the energy balance. And it looks pretty good qualitatively. One thing you can notice from this graph is that we tend to overestimate it a little early in the season and underestimate later in the season. One reason for that may be that they have a fixed 2-meter height for their temperature relative humidity measurements, whereas we're moving with the canopy, and the cotton grew fairly well that year near the sensor height. So looking at a scatter plot of these same data gives you a better feeling for how well it really fits around the one-to-one line. You know, you get regressions, but unless you use those to correct, you really want to look at the bias, and we're essentially unbiased, which is very encouraging on daily data from bushland, and we have an RMSE of 1.2 millimeters per day. These are daily numbers. So that's a little context of maybe how well this method could do if you had an ideal fetch. We're applying it in northern Colorado, and so you can see we're in the state of Colorado. This box then goes to this area, which I'll blow up, and we're working with Kendall's unit on the limited irrigation research farm, where they have a randomized block design of various treatment levels in terms of irrigation. It's in this green is not a satellite photo, but it does designate generally we have irrigation in this area and dry land, either grasslands or dry land cropping outside of that area, with large irrigation districts on the Cashlaputa River, and this is the town of Greeley. So here's a picture in the plot that we only were able to measure in two treatments. We did full irrigation and a low irrigation level, which is designed to be, here it says meets, but it's actually designed to be 50% of the ET demand. So on a weekly basis, compute the demand and try to supply that in full irrigation at 100%. And then another important thing is that these plots are 9 meters wide, so we had to design our height of the radiometer so that it only looked within the plot that we wanted to measure. So this shows that at the beginning of the season, two things about this are, again, you can see the height of the radiometer, which is not a standard 2-meter height. This whole system moves up. The anemometer is at 2 meters, and this is corn spaced at 30 inches with drip irrigation. And the soil measurements I'll show you are replicated, or we have two sets of the same measurements that are averaged because one's near the center and one's near the drip line. So looking first at the soil, the subsurface measurements, we have temperature. We only use for our energy balance these top three to get the G0, which I showed you. And here's a heat flux plate at 8 centimeters. And then we have a water content sensor, the hydroprobe, that gets the 4-centimeter water content depth. Net radiometer, the anemometer, then we have ventilated air temperature and relative humidity, and looking out into the screen, we have an infrared skin temperature. So from these, then we, working on the 15-minute data, this is early in the season, June 2010, to show you the different components. So again, net radiation is red, the ground heat flux, you can see this blue, which goes negative at night in the direction we've defined, sensible heat flux, and then this is the difference between those. And one thing you notice from this is that we have a day where we really get spiky issues, and that's due to rainfall, which in this sub-daily, I haven't taken out the rainfall effects yet, but it illustrates what happens with sensible heat. It really moves that down, and therefore the residual spikes up kind of artificially. You don't have ET during rainfall. So on our daily results, we just remove the days that have rainfall. We might do something more elaborate later. And then you can just see, you know, if you have a estimated sensible heat that's very strong, even after the sun's gone down, you end up estimating evaporation being high. So looking later in the season, now we see that our estimated ET starts to exceed the net radiation, which is due to a combination of the ground heat flux and the sensible heat during the day in particular. And again, we have a rainfall event. After that rainy day, we have even higher ET, which makes sense. So the potential ET can be higher than the net radiation. That's just a point to make. And then we looked at this transition. So one of my colleagues looked at this and said, well, you shouldn't have it higher than net radiation, but I'd argue that that may not be wrong. But we do see an increasing trend, and if we look at what's happening with the crop, this is now leaf area index over that time period. There are only two measurements in this interval, so we just say that maybe somewhere between 0.5 and 1 leaf area index, we kind of transition from being less than net radiation to having that potential for ET to go higher. So now these data are they're all averaged over a day. This is in 2009 under full irrigation. The dots are the energy balance method, and I'm showing a ET ref, which is it's a weather station over grass, an irrigated grass. And this is a Shuttleworth-Wallace modification of the Pendant Montes. So that should be an estimate of potential evaporation. And you can kind of see from these that we have a lot of points falling above what we would estimate for potential ET. So I took the difference between the energy balance and Shuttleworth-Wallace just to see where that is. And indeed, under full irrigation, we're biased higher. We're estimating ET that's higher than Shuttleworth-Wallace. Notice I'm careful to talk about everything as estimated, and not much significant trend over the season. Under the low irrigation treatment, similar thing, except that now we're getting closer to that. In fact, we see that there's essentially zero difference overall over the whole season between our Shuttleworth-Wallace potential and our energy balance method, but it has come down compared with full irrigation. 2010 was very similar, so I'll skip that. 2011, just to show you the same thing. Again, full irrigation, we come a little higher than zero on the difference. And then under low irrigation, we have that same actual, maybe that trend has some significance. It's not statistically significant, but we're near zero on that. So again, similar on all 3 years. So now we're looking at daily fluxes as the components. This is again in 2010. I guess I didn't show you 2010, but I wanted you to see that on this axis we have the net radiation, the sensible heat flux, and the ground heat flux. So the ground heat flux on a daily basis is not too significant. And again, the sensible heat really drives what's happening with the latent heat over on this side, as well as, of course, net radiation drives that general pattern. So if we look at differences between our high and low irrigation treatments, you can do some simple math just to show that that difference is going to be driven by a difference in the upward radiation, which relates to the albedo and the ground conditions, canopy conditions, which do differ between the high and low irrigation crops. And then we get this change in latent heat flux, which relates to a change in sensible heat flux. And I'll ignore ground heat flux for now. So this is looking at a difference plot of those same data on the left plot, and then we see that indeed the ground heat flux difference is relatively low. There is some difference in the net radiation early in the season versus later in the season, but really the ET again is on this side, 0 to 4 millimeters per day in the scale is really driven by what's estimated to be happening with sensible heat flux. So to summarize, estimated ET is highly sensitive to the computed sensible heat, and we saw that in the aerodynamic resistance, and yet compared with the lysimeter, it's encouraging that this relatively simple method may do pretty well in an absolute sense. We focused on differences in ET between high and low and got delta ET somewhere in that 0 to 4 millimeters per day, which are at least qualitatively consistent with the treatment effect. And on average, the estimated ET under low irrigation was about 85% of ET under full irrigation. So the experimental design, if you remember, was 55%. And that's just because you can't control the seasonal rainfall and those kinds of things. And so this gives one way of estimating that, in addition to other methods being used on the site. And then, not to put a lot of confidence in these numbers, but just to show you our seasonal differences in those 3 years varied from 42, which really may have been due to a wetter year and not meeting our experimental design. But these other 2 years that were closer to experimental design fall in that range of 135 to 150 millimeters per season. And again, a lot of people were involved in helping with this work, which I'm grateful for, both conceptually and out in the field. And I just thank you for your interest.
Thank you very much, Tim. We have time for a few questions.
What do you do with dew duration? I noticed the LA went negative on some of those.
Yes.
Part of that offset?
Just so you're saying, what is the dew causing that?
Yeah,
probably so. I mean, it's really just, it's whatever's happening in the right above the canopy in terms of that sensible heat is what was driving that, right? So if you're changing your humidity and your temperature, that's going to affect your estimate. I can't, again, I'm cautious to say that it's really what's happening in that fine scale process, because we're trying to use this more on a daily
basis. What I'm saying by that is that the dew that's deposited has to be basically water that's contributed to use that next day for ET.
Yes.
And that's part of the problem. We don't do that with the models.
Right, right, in the simulation model.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. Yes?
What are you using for stability correction factor?
Well, that's computed. I didn't show that computation because it does get a little complicated based on your stability of the atmosphere. But that's in our program, and I can show you. This is, Stassi, what is the, Sassindran, maybe know the correction, the stability factor correction. Yes, which reference was used on that?
I think it's from you.
Yeah.
it's not nothing new. It's hard to
hear. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
So I think it's not really a matter of expertise, but how did you apply the irrigation? Why the irrigation?
So it's a drip irrigated field, yeah, and it's yeah. So you mean in terms of the raindrop, right? We have time for more?
Yeah, we'll take one more.
Yeah, thanks. Looks like your final plot of the comparison between irrigated and rain-fed stuff in 2011 just showed an interesting 2012 dry year. I was wondering if you had a preliminary look to see how that might change.
No, unfortunately not. We And the dry one is irrigated. It's just lower. It's not dry land. But we actually ended up moving this equipment because of logistics and personnel to a dry land field where we do have some measurements in wheat that haven't been analyzed yet. So, yeah.
Thanks again, Tim.
Thank you.